On today's episode of the Concast, we discuss the ever elusive SI joint. Good morning, everybody. Happy Friday. My name is Connor Collins. I am a registered massage therapist and sports injury therapist practicing 45 minutes outside of Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. And welcome to episode 31 of the Concast, a podcast where we discuss all things health, wellness, and injuries in an attempt to better understand the human body. Today, for episode 31, we're going to be discussing the ever elusive SI joint or sacroiliac joint, a word that is used to describe mostly low back pain, but also a word that is thrown around in the injury and therapy space, sometimes maybe more often than it should be. So hopefully today we can discuss some of the reasons as to why this pain might be experienced by you as a patient, or if you're a therapist seeing a lot of these symptom presentations, what might be some of the driving factors for why our patients may be experiencing the things that they are. Before we get into that, let's take an opportunity to understand what the SI joint is, or the sacroiliac joint is. So just like its name says, this joint is on both sides of your body, bilateral. You have a left and a right one. This is a joint that is formed between the sacrum, which is a triangular-shaped bone where the apex of the triangle points towards the feet. It is basically ending in your tailbone and is the bottom of your lumbar spine or your low back. The other bone that's forming this joint is the ilium, or the half part of the pelvis. And we've got an ilium on our right and our left. So essentially these two joints form an inlet, which helps form the bowl of the pelvis where the legs attach to, and obviously give us the ability to walk and move around. So sacro, standing for sacrum, that triangular bone, and iliac, standing for ilium, or half of the pelvis. So we have a right and we have a left sacroiliac joint. And often what I see in the clinic is that patients will come in, and this is one of those terms that many people know how to use. SI joint being one, you hear a lot of sciatica. These are common terms that have been put out into the public, so many people will use them to describe their own back pain. They'll say, oh, I think it's my SI joint, or I was told by a friend it's my SI joint. So this, as a result of that, become a scapegoat for a lot of low back pain. You will also hear things like, my SI joint is out of place, or my SI joint is stuck and not moving. And these are terms that aren't exactly accurate. The SI joint, the sacrum and the ilium, is a very robust, mechanically integral joint. So in terms of it moving out of place and needing to be put back in place, there's nothing to be done there. The SI joint, in terms of being in place, is located quite well. It is very, very stable anatomically. And if that joint were coming out of place, you would be in a significant accident, like a significant motorcycle accident, motor vehicle accident, where that joint would actually dislocate. And as a result of that, you would be rushed to the emergency room. I think it's important to recognize this from the get-go, to understand that this joint doesn't move out of place. It, for the most part, moves quite well in the majority of people, even if they are experiencing symptoms. And this is important to know, in that it will reframe the patient's pain experience, which we'll talk a little bit more as to why that might be important. So where I would like to start off is talking about the regional injuries that can occur, which might in fact create pain experiences around this joint. as well as other things that might cause referred pain into this joint. Because from my experience, especially early in my career, when someone presented with these type of symptoms, I would focus very locally on this joint and think of it as a really mechanical problem. And the more of them I saw, the more I started to realize that many of them are sort of referred into the area that the patient is experiencing pain rather than that being the particular injury site. When I see a patient with suspected sacroiliac pain, I want to rule out whether there's any abnormal physiology going on within the joint itself. And so what are some things that can cause this? This can be permanent, so it can be a disease that's progressing, or it can be impermanent, so it could be an injury that's caused a local inflammation. And with inflammation, there are a bunch of cells that are pushed into an area, and that gives somebody the opportunity to feel pain. It doesn't always result in pain, but certain people will feel pain when inflammation is present while others won't. So the first question that I ask myself is there some sort of local inflammation or inflammatory response going on within that joint, the space between the sacrum and the ilium that might be causing some discomfort? Things that can cause this. So there are different forms of arthritis, one known as ankylosing spondylitis. This is a diagnosed form of a rheumatic disorder. So this is often an autoimmune disorder that starts with inflammation and then actually results in fusion of the bones in the spine. Now, when this disease starts, it usually starts in the sacroiliac joint. There are some other factors that might be associated with this injury. So we do know that there seems to be a correlation between people with digestive diseases like Crohn's and colitis that may in fact develop this simultaneously or soon before or after. So the person might be presenting with some digestive troubles. They might have substantial back pain at night, which is a need for further investigation. They might experience substantial morning stiffness. These are things that need to be investigated. This disease will usually show up on a X-ray. Now, this is not to say that everyone with back pain has ankylosing spondylitis, but this can be a primary cause of sacroiliac pain, discomfort, if these other things that I had mentioned might be associated with the things that they are experiencing. Now, certainly don't be using this podcast to diagnose yourself if you're listening for information. You always want to visit a qualified provider to help facilitate the process. Now, along with ankylosing spondylitis, there are some other rheumatic-based diseases that can create inflammation within the sacroiliac joint. One of those is gout, which we commonly think of as being in the big toe or in the foot, but as that progresses, it can move up into those joints as well, around the hip and the low back. So if you yourself or the patient that you're seeing has a history of gout, or they're experiencing an attack of gouty arthritis, then this might be something that you'll want to consider. Maybe they need to go back to their family doctor to explore a course of medication. The other very common presentation that we see is that women that are pregnant will often have irritation and inflammation within this joint. And this is often because of the influx of relaxin, which we see spiking in the first trimester and then tapering off. But what relaxin does is it will relax the joints and the ligaments to prepare the pelvic bowl for the delivery of the baby. And in doing so, it will cause a gapping of the joint, which during movement, as weight gain increases during pregnancy, might create a local inflammatory response. We will also often see post-pregnancy a general irritation to this area, which we'll talk a little bit later about. One of the other causes of local inflammation to the joint is an injury, and this can be a traumatic injury. So slip and fall on ice, for example, a car accident, falling off of a bike, or falling from a height. As a result of any acute injury, there is an inflammatory response. This inflammatory response can choose to invade the space in between these two bones and create what's known as a sacroiliitis, or an inflammation of the joint. We can also have chronic sacroiliitis without any of the aforementioned causes. And this will often, again, show up on x-ray, where the joint itself will be inflamed, but we don't really know why that is. And if there is this inflammation within the joint, then there is the potential for pain to occur. And this may be one of the primary causes that is aggravating your condition. Now, in my experience, this influx of inflammation into the joint itself is actually quite rare in terms of, if you look at all back pain suffered, how many of these conditions would be a true inflammation of the sacroiliac joint. I'm not exactly sure what the research would suggest, but it is a very small percentage of the population, and this is anecdotally from what I've seen over the years. From there, we would like to think outside of the box and start to move away from the sacroiliac joint itself and move to some of the soft tissues around the joint. So for example, after I look at the joint, I want to question whether or not there's a sprain. And a sprain can happen acutely with like a slip and fall, or a sprain can happen chronically over time from things like sport, sustained positions, lifting low loads at high repetition over time. And there are many ligaments. Ligaments are pieces of tissue that connect bone to bone and offer passive stability to joints. So they offer stability to joints when our muscular system fails. And some of the ligaments that might be sprained around this area include ligaments like the iliolumbar ligament, a thick band of ligaments on the back of the sacroiliac joint known as the dorsal sacral ligaments. We have ligaments around that area known as sacrospinous ligaments or sacrotuberous ligaments. And whenever these ligaments are sprained, they also offer the potential for inflammation, irritation, and pain. In circumstances like we were talking about earlier with pregnancy, where the joint will become a little bit laxed due to the increase in relaxin, these ligaments can also have a lot of laxity in them. Post-pregnancy, they may not return to their normal resting length and can cause some problems post-pregnancy, which can be addressed with therapy and exercise. But it's important to recognize that if you're experiencing true sacroiliac symptoms during pregnancy, that may persist beyond delivery, and there may be things that need to be done after based on the fact that there may be things left over from the physiological process of pregnancy that still need to be addressed. Now, in between the joint space and the ligaments, there are a bunch of nerves that run in the area that overlie the sacroiliac joint. And sometimes those nerves can get irritated in the tissue. There may be not gliding as freely as we want them to. They can get stuck against tissue and bone in the area, which can create increased signals back to the brain, as well as inflammation within that tissue that can increase signaling back to the brain. And sometimes as a result of that, the brain gets fed up and creates this pain experience down around the low back. So you start to address some of these issues. Now, most notably in this area, there are a number of nerve roots coming off of the lower part of the spinal cord known as the sacral nerve roots. Particularly S1 through to S3 are roughly around the same level as the sacroiliac joint, and if they are getting inflamed, they can create and mimic often symptoms of sacroiliac joint pain. Now, with respect to sprains and these nerve irritations, I find from personal experience that when you're around the tissue and you're palpating or touching it, it can often recreate some of their symptoms with quite light pressure, as opposed to in cases where the joint itself might be irritated, the pain seems to be not always, but often a little bit dull, a little bit achier, a little bit harder to recreate with palpation or touching of the patient. Now, along with local irritation of nerves, we can also have nerves that are irritated away from the injury site that are referring pain into the injury site. And this is where we start to get a little bit more global in our approach. Now, there are a series of cutaneous nerves. Cutaneous nerves are nerves that provide the sensation of touch and the sensation that may get converted into a pain experience. And there are two most notable nerves that refer into the area where the sacroiliac joint is. And this is the superior and middle clunial nerves. Now, the superior clunial nerve comes from sort of the lower mid-back at the area of T12 to L3, so the lower part of the mid-back and the upper part of the lower back. This can often be associated with a syndrome known as Main syndrome, and Main syndrome is where you have pain along the posterior or the backside of your pelvis, the outside part of your leg, and the front of your abdomen. And sometimes this pain on the posterior aspect of your pelvis gets mistaken as sacroiliac pain because the patient may be also ignoring the fact that they're getting this lower abdominal pain at the same time and or this outside leg pain. So the superior clunial nerve can refer into that area. There's also a middle clunial nerve that's coming off of the nerve roots that we talked about earlier, S1 through to S4, and this can create localized pain just over the sacroiliac joint as well. Now, in particular with a Main syndrome, because it's coming from higher up in the back, there are certainly things that we want to do more globally to address this referred pain that someone might be experiencing. If we don't catch this as a therapist and we pay attention to the local tissue and we mistaken it for local inflammation, for example, we might continue to treat this locally with very little resolution to symptoms. And it's because we haven't gone with this global approach, moving higher up into the back, addressing maybe some of the tissues there with some treatment, and then addressing movement strategies or rehabilitative exercises to help try and alleviate this. So the clunial nerves are very, very important when it comes to pain around the region of the sacroiliac joint. Further to this, we can also get a referral of joints from the low back into the area of the sacroiliac joint. And this includes a lot of the low back joints, or joints known as the lumbar facets. And if the lumbar facets are irritated and have inflammation around them or the ligaments that surround them, this might be in the case of an advanced osteoarthritis or some other physiological process that's going on. They can also refer pain into the area of the sacroiliac joint. So if we don't see things starting to progress with addressing things locally, we want to look a little bit more globally and understand that there are nerves and there are joints that refer into the area of the sacroiliac joint. Now, once we've ruled out all of these abnormal physiological processes and referred pain, this is probably what I see in my experience the most, which is a generalized weakness of the area. This might be for a number of reasons. This might be from an old injury. This might be from a lack of activity. This might be from a lower health profile, a lack of movement. This pain can also be perpetuated by substantial apprehension of movement. We know that people with low back pain and sacroiliac pain, there is a lot of apprehension, and that apprehension changes how our nervous system and our brain acts in response to threat. Many people that have suffered from back pain for a long period of time get very apprehensive about doing things. Maybe it's around the house, picking up their laundry or tying their shoes or lifting something heavy. And we now know, based on research that's been done in probably the last decade, that this starts to change how our brain acts and can make our nervous system hypersensitive and if we're apprehensive about things, then that can certainly cause our nervous system to increase our pain experience. So often this weakness or lack of activity paired with this apprehension is creating the symptoms that they're feeling without any of the previously mentioned things in the podcast. So there is actually no local biological change to tissue. There's no nerves that are inflamed. There's no ligaments that are sprained. But there may have been an old injury that's gone on. Generalized weakness and fear of movement has developed. As a result of that, the patient's experiencing apprehension in movement. They feel as though they're weak. They feel as though they're losing function. And this, in fact, in the research, will increase the experience of pain. Now, the last scenario is a combination of everything. There may be local biological changes to tissue. So there might be some inflammation in the joint or a sprain. And there may be this experience of weakness and apprehension. So for me, what I like to do is I like to try and rule out as many of the biological drivers of pain as possible. And then if I'm left with nothing else, I will treat it as though it is a generalized weakness along with apprehension. The first thing that I want to do is I want to try and provide some education to the patient. I certainly want to inform them that the joint doesn't need to go back into place. It hasn't been moved out of place and needs to be put back in, because often this will increase a person's apprehension. And to think that something's out of place and needs to be moved back in by me creates a significant amount of urgency. And if that isn't immediately corrected, the thought is, well, that's still out of place and needs to be addressed. So the first thing I want to do is educate and tell people that that feeling of maybe instability or sharp pain that you're experiencing, that feeling of stiffness that you're experiencing, these are all created by our nervous system, and these are nervous system experiences. This does not mean that a joint is out of place. This is a very stable joint. There's no need to worry there, and that will often calm the patient down and allow us to move forward in a productive way where we can talk about the things that I'll want to use to try and help them along the way. What I have felt has helped for me and my patients is introducing movement, especially if they are not moving, and this can be done from a variety of ways. We want the movement to be just enough, but not too much. This might be something like a traditional strengthening exercise. It might be a movement pattern. It might be something as simple as walking or swimming, where we can start to test the body in a manner that's safe and push the body gradually back towards the normal activities of daily living that that person had. I want to have a discussion with the patient about what they like to do in their activities of daily living, things that they miss, and start to help them move back towards that with, again, exercise and movement. Some of the other more specific exercises that I found to be valuable is working on things like hip strength, so hip bridging, as well as single leg stability, the ability to be able to move and produce power on one leg. Anything that is a hip dominant exercise that is not aggravating your symptoms can be very beneficial. If we look back to what we're talking about with Main syndrome happening higher up in the back, and we find a presentation that's similar to that, we may be doing a disservice with not looking at the front of the core and stability exercises to prevent extension of the back. These are known as anti-extension exercises. So things like a front plank, a sliding plank, or an overhead press in a half kneeling or a tall kneeling position allows us to understand how to maintain the trunk, and it might not be maintaining trunk stiffness, but maintaining the position of the trunk, and then going about tasks. Might be pressing, pulling, pushing, and developing force. This will allow us to build up strength. It will allow us to build confidence and allow the nervous system to adapt accordingly and start to drop pain. So really, I think that hip dominance and anterior core stability will often help with these presentations. I'm not saying that the person has a weak core. I'm merely saying that allowing the person to explore movement in these ways can be beneficial for them. I find that if I'm able to address all of these concerns. So if I'm able to really pinpoint if there's a biological pain generator, a local pain generator, figure out whether or not there's some referred pain into the area, and then incorporate movement as soon as possible, along with that education piece, especially if the patient's coming in worried that something's out of place, I've had very good results in helping patients get back to all of their activities of daily living, and they have an understanding of what might aggravate them in the future, as well as what has gone on here with respect to the injury or the pain experience that they've suffered. And so that's really how I see SI joint pain or sacroiliac pain. Often in my experience, it is not actually pain that's local to the joint. It's often a generalized weakness in the area or some of these more global tissues referring pain into the region of the sacroiliac joint. So my question for you is, have you suffered from this? Has this podcast caused you to reframe and rethink how you go about managing this pain? If you're a practitioner, what are some things that you've done that you've seen to be of value to your patients to help with sacroiliac pain? As always, I hope that you found this podcast episode to be valuable. Have yourselves a great weekend, folks, and we'll see you in the next one.